tear down their cottages, destroy their corn. They were dispersed, but still the vision lingers on. You poor take courage, you rich take care. This earth was made a common treasury for everyone to share. All things in common, all people one. We come in peace, the orders came to cut them down.
And welcome to Here We Stand. I'm your host, Kevin Annett, back again, March 18th, 2018. And that song is one of my favorites. It's been kind of a theme song here on Where We Stand and also Radio Free Canada, our predecessor. And the message is the same, and the struggle doesn't change over the centuries, does it, people? The few trying to dominate the many. Well, we are turning the tables on them. We are winning, actually. I don't know if you can measure winning and losing in absolute terms, but we are definitely making headway. And here's an example. I just got something this week leading up to our Operation Atonement. I actually got a joint letter by a group of, get this, Catholic clergy, including some ex-Catholic clergy. And what they're doing is they are declaring independence from Rome. They are forming their own congregation. And believe it or not, this is taking place in Italy, the heartland of so-called Roman Catholicism. They are saying to the Vatican, we're not going to be part of your murderous system anymore. We're going to be independent Christians worshiping on our own. And what inspired them was reading, they got an Italian translation of our book, Here We Stand, The Call of the New Protestant Reformation, which basically says, it's time for Christians to leave these murderous corporations that have caused genocide, that still traffic children, that are engaged in the arms industry. These hypocrites that take taxpayers' protection in tax-exempt status, benefits, and other privileges from governments and use it to profit themselves and murder the innocent. Well, somehow a copy of our book got translated into Italian. Who knows who did it, but that's fine. We don't believe in copyright. And they read it and they said, okay, let's act on this. So they've declared to Rome their independence. Now, this is showing the revolution that's starting from the grassroots, not just in religious communities, but all over. People are asserting independence. And today we have with us a group of people in Ireland who are doing the same thing. They've been fighting various campaigns over the years. They're seasoned veterans of this and many other struggles. But over the last little while, we've been talking about Patricia Bland in Port Leash. And she's a mother whose child, more than one child, three children, are being trafficked by this private agency, TUSLA, which gets money, just like the Children's Aid Society does in Canada. They get money to traffic children out of their families into foster families. And it's the case, whether it's in Ireland or Canada, that if you're a foster parent, you get a lot more government subsidy than you do if you're a mother, a natural mother, raising her child on social assistance. So in other words, there's a definite attempt to destroy the family. And TUSLA is part of it. We're going to hear about that today. We've got a number of the Irish folks waiting very soon to come online. And I also wanted to mention, too, to remind folks that next Sunday, March 25th, Palm Sunday, that's the Sunday just before Easter, is the 10th anniversary of that momentous event when a bunch of us went into Holy Rosary Cathedral in downtown Vancouver, the Catholic cathedral there, and a bunch of me and some wild Indians, and we occupied the cathedral, and 2 weeks later, the government buckled and announced that we're going to start looking for the missing residential school children, which of course never happened. But that public pressure led to the official acknowledgement in 2008, later that year, of yes, indeed, genocide happened at the hands of these churches, but by the way, they're innocent and are off the hook and don't have to have any consequence. So that 10th anniversary will be marked in various ways. And don't forget, Good Friday, people in many different countries, six so far that I've counted, are going to be involved in direct actions at Catholic, Anglican churches, United Churches in Canada. So if you want more information about that, go to thecommonland@gmail.com, write to us, we'll send you up more information. Hell, we'll send you stickers, leaflets, the whole bit. We've got a really good sticker. It says, no tax exemptions for child-killing churches, boycott and defund the Roman Catholic, Anglican, and United Church of Canada. Learn more at murderbydecree.com, itccs.org. We like to stick these stickers right on the front of the churches on a Sunday morning. Church offices. We go to the insurance companies that underwrite these churches. We go to the members of parliament and say, how come these churches are getting tax exempt status when they've got blood on their hands? So there's all sorts of things we can do. And we've also got a kind of an amusing little pamphlet that one of our members did up. It's called Church Stoppers Manual. How to Halt the Antichrist in Your Community. It's got 25 different humorous suggestions about what you can do to these criminal churches. Some of the ones I like are, post a sign on your local Anglican, Catholic, and United church that reads, "Closed for moral renovation." Or take a padlock and put it around the front of the church. Tell folks that they're not allowed to subsidize and take part in these churches. These are some of the entertaining things you can do. Perform a citizen's arrest on these priests. Go to the cops and tell them it's a crime scene. You should go investigate. Ask them where all these missing children are. And, you know, it's the important thing is that what we found over the years when you do these actions is that there's a tremendous groundswell of goodwill and outrage out there, and we need to tap into it. But somebody has to break the ice, and that's what we're doing on this show. It's that this show is not simply to passively educate people. It's to train, it's to catalyze, it's to organize people, and that's what we're going to be doing today and always. So if you want, again, more information, go to itccs.org, murderbydecree.com. We are here every Sunday, 3 p.m. Pacific, 10 p.m. Greenwich time, and lo and behold, the Irish folks are with us. Hello, everyone.
Hi, Kevin.
It's always so good to hear from y'all. And I've been giving a bit of a background, but I know there's a number of you who want to say stuff today. And unfortunately, with our limited hour, we're going to have to be kind of concise when we talk, because I know there's a lot of stuff that people want to get into. But if Mary Kelly, if you're there, I wanted to ask you, you know, when John will send us the list of questions and things people were concerned about, because of this Operation Atonement is on and Easter is coming up, I was wondering if you wanted to talk a little bit about, for a few minutes, the situation in Ireland with the Roman Catholic Church, you know, the impact it's had, what people are feeling now about this institution. Can you share a little bit of that with us?
Of course, Kevin, and welcome to Dublin, Ireland. Yeah, very few people go to church anymore. That's the first impact you know. Most people you speak to on the streets, they don't even want to know about church, state. Most people don't get their children baptized anymore because they just don't believe in religion. They don't have their children confirmed, indoctrinated into the church. It's basically a fallen. Well, obviously, we know it's not built on solid ground. It's going to fall. But the corruption in the Catholic Church started for me about 20-odd years ago, maybe 30 years ago, when my son witnessed a child being abused in school. He was in a Christian Brothers school, and it was very, very sad for me, because at the time I was a good practicing Catholic. And then that woke me up, and I removed him from the Christian Brothers school, and my second son then followed him into the same school. He found the same abuse, so I removed him. But the last straw was with my third son, my youngest child. And he just ran bald-headed out of the school when he was 9 years old, and I put him into a Protestant school, and he thrived, and he's still thriving. Mm-hmm. Basically, I watched a show today on Russian television, and oh my God, what's his name? Jose Bergoglio, now known as Pope Francis.
Right.
Not looking good. He actually agrees with covering up cases of paedophilia.
Oh, yeah.
So, reconfirms for me, Kevin, what we already know. Right across this country, the corruption between crimes of church and state is off the wall right now.
Yeah.
And it's really sad to think that one time growing up as a child, you were confident. Well, I wouldn't say I was confident and happy with how the Catholic Church treated me, because really looking back, we were never treated very well.
Yeah.
I went to a convent school, a private convent school, and the nuns abused us. My mother removed us from that school, and parish priest used to catch my ear and pinch it so hard. I felt like it would fall off my face.
For a long time in Ireland, the church was almost seen as no, maybe this isn't true, but at least the image that was put out there was the church was kind of a symbol of the culture against the English, you know, that was something that people pulled on to, the symbol of their nationalism. Was that true, or is that just made up?
No, I never felt that growing up. I always thought that we were a free Ireland and we got rid of the Brits a long time ago, but as we know today, we didn't. We're still ruled by the Crown of England. But the church had the biggest hold on the people and they're losing it fast.
Yeah.
That's the best thing for me.
One final question about that. The Sean Brady, who was the cardinal there, he stepped down and there was speculation about all that. It was interesting. He resigned the same week that it turned out he was connected to the cover up of the mass, you know, in the cistern at Chum when they found the baby's skeletons.
Yeah.
Is there anything else that's come out about that, about who those children were, why the cover up, the whole bit?
Or was it 800 guys? Yeah, I think it was 800 babies were found in incinerators and mass graves. No, they're still trying to cover it up. And the people are still not getting justice for them. Now, in this day and age, that's really hard to believe. That the Catholic Church actually have the power to still continue to cover that crime.
Well, they've got a lot of money.
They have to be exposed. Oh, there's huge money in it.
Yep.
I was talking to the guys earlier on, just saying about how the priest used to go around, in this parish, used to go around every house to the old folks who couldn't get to church and bring them what they called Holy Communion.
Yeah.
And they'd all give them 10 or 20 euro, or maybe 10 pounds at the time, which was a lot of money.
Yep.
And he'd gladly take it and put it in his pocket.
Mm-hmm.
That same priest in our parish, we used to run a workshop out by the River Liffey, close by where I live, for the young kids who left school early to get them into some kind of a training program. And we were losing money and we couldn't understand where the money was going. And it folded. And then the local priest was involved, and of course he was in charge of the money. And then the next thing, the machinery went missing. We were going to sell the machinery and try to set up somewhere else. And he sold the machinery off. And I was in the house up the road from me where I live. Actually, when you look out my back window, you can see the house. It used to be the Bishop's Palace. And I was in that house with that priest at the time. And he had paintings galore that he had bought.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
With the money that was supposed to be given to help the kids of the area.
Right.
You know, it's just endless. It never stops.
Right. Now, I want to bring Patricia in because, you know, a lot of the listeners have been writing saying, like, what's going on with her story? What happened with her in court recently? But hold on to that, Mary, because it's all related. You know, that history with the church, very much related to what's happening now with Tulsa and the child trafficking. So, Patricia, are you there?
Hi, Kevin.
Hi, how are you?
All right. Thank you.
Tell us the latest.
Yeah, well, I was in court about a week and a half ago, and the judge in the court actually put a gagging order on me. She told me I wasn't to be on social media or I wasn't to be on any radio shows. She actually directed me. I wasn't to be on social media or radio shows. And I basically told her I wasn't listening and I was going ahead and do it anyway. They have all that matters to me, which is my kids. So I really have nothing else to lose.
Yeah.
So, but as it happens, I had a meeting with my social worker on Thursday after access. And I went through a parental capacity test that was done on the 9th and the 10th of January of this year. And there was about 25 pages in this, and they wouldn't actually allow me to have a copy of it because it would breach the in-camera rule. So I was allowed to sit and just take notes and different things. And they have a lot of people's names mentioned in my reports and saying that we met through social media and all these different things. We're part of anti-authority groups. But the whole lot of it is actually lies. The woman that done it, she was from up the north, somewhere in around Londonderry. I've been trying to contact the same woman since the end of January of this year. And I got in contact with social services in Antrim. And they told me they knew who the woman was, and apparently the same woman works with the social services. When this woman came to do the parental capacity test, this woman was supposed to be impartial, but it turns out that she wasn't. She actually works with the child services in the north of Ireland.
Right, so it's another case of, well, the whole deck is stacked against you. And
yeah.
People have been asking about this gag order, and apparently the judge made reference to Canadian radio.
Yeah, they said, well, they said any radio. They knew I was on your radio show because I said I was on your radio show. They knew that I had been on the Sean McGuire show previous to your show as well. So they have known that I've been putting stuff out in social media and doing radio shows as well for some time now. But I think that you're just trying to shut me up, Kevin, and to say, yep. You know, not to talk about it, but it's not going to work because, like, I've nothing else to lose. They have everything that matters to me.
That's right. And, you know, there must be desperate to act so ridiculous to say you can't speak about this, you know.
Yeah. They're actually going for a full care order on my children on the 27th of March this year. So that means that my kids will actually be in care until they're at least 18. But what I'm afraid of there at the minute is I know a lot of people in around the Dublin area, and there's at least 12 kids after being released in Tusla's care in the past few weeks. And these 12 kids are actually homeless and living on the streets of Dublin.
Right.
And when I actually look at these children, I can actually picture my own children if they were to get this care order. When my own kids turn to 18, a lot of these kids don't have anyone because they lost all their family connections. They've lost everything down. And again, it's back down to the church and state. My kids were brought back to Crumlin Hospital there a couple of weeks ago, and there were follow-up tests and that were done. And Reverend Dermot Martin, he's the Bishop of Dublin, I think.
Yeah. Yep.
He actually, he's the head over Crumlin Hospital. So I told Crumlin Hospital that they wanted to touch any of my kids, that I didn't give consent to it. But they went ahead and done it anyway. Now, with him being the head of the hospital, he would have happened to give the okay for these tests to be done on my children.
Right.
I then emailed Reverend Dermot Martin, and I sent him some of my information, and I told him that I am aware that he's the head of Crumlin Hospital, and that he would be aware of my kids, and that he would be aware that I went to St. Louise's ward in Crumlin Hospital and told him not to touch my children, and went ahead and did it anyway.
It's important that that name be kept in mind, because we can hold him personally liable for anything that happens to your kids, Patricia. And I want to ask for a moment, Vincent or John, if you had any comments about Patricia's case right now and what you think needs to be done about this in terms of any kind of public campaign.
Hi, Kevin. Vincent here.
Hi.
Hi, how are you doing? Well, just back to what we were discussing before, I think now the more exposure, the better for Trish, because as I see it now, they're trying to shut her up as best they can, and they're trying everything in their power to do that. They won't give her any paperwork to defend herself, not giving her any due process, any way to actually fight her case, or actually know what she's fighting against. It's a lot of hearsay, there's a lot of stuff being said, but there's a lot of messing between the state, the Gardaí, the social workers, and a few other entities, you know, like the council and stuff like that. But I just think for Trish, she just needs as much exposure as possible to highlight that it's not only her, I suspect, that is going through the same thing, you know. There's many, many other people, not just in Ireland, I'd say probably in Canada as well, and all around the world, there's a lot of it going on, because child trafficking, it's a global problem, but it's systemic in Ireland. You know, and that goes back a long time, like well over 100 years. This has been happening. But it's like a chameleon. It's changed its colours, but it's still a chameleon, you know, that way.
Right. Very much.
But basically, that's it. It's just basically we need to get as much exposure as possible. Sorry, just one second. Oh, yeah. They said also on Facebook, they said we met through Facebook. Now, me and Trish and all have been friends for a long time, well before that. We, all of us together, you know. So we discuss things through Facebook, but that's what social media is. We can use social media to contact our friends. I think that's what it was designed to do. So I don't see how that has any relevance. But at the same time, it kind of slanders our name, thinking that we're just, you know, we're revolutionaries. But we'd have to be when people are taking our kids away, you know? Because who else would do it?
Exactly. Who else is going to do it?
Exactly.
John, what are your comments and thoughts about all this?
It's quite extraordinary, Kevin. Hi to your listeners. One of the first things I'd like to say is that we are a full support group for Patricia in what she's enduring in our case. Obviously, in your previous show, I acknowledged with listeners that I look into laws an awful lot. I've had particular interest in Patricia's case to try and help her as best as possible. I'd like to take a couple of minutes to quickly read down a list of breaches of law in reference to this so-called statutory authority of TUSLA. If I may read a list for a few moments. I'd like to verify that in my findings a lot of this is state law here in Ireland for your listener, purposes of your listeners, but I'd like to read breaches of it that I've discovered. Sections 23 and 45 of the Freedom of Information Act 2014. I've discovered this because I've examined TUSLA not giving discovery of documents. Obviously, Patricia has verified no warrant, no documentation around her three children being taken away from her. Yeah. Now, apparently, TUSLA are using data or argued data protections to say that they don't have to reveal a discovery of what's going on. That's totally unacceptable. My assessment of it says they're in breaches of 23 and 45 of the Freedom of Information Act. Quickly moving on. Section 65 of the Court of Justice Act tells us that the executive is interfering with the lower court that Patricia has been put through around her children being taken away from her, which is a clear breach of the Constitution, of the Irish Constitution. Article 38.6 verifies this, that a subordinate or lower court does not have to adhere to constitutional safeguards, which is a clear procedure of what's going on here around Patricia's case. Moving on, there is a clear breach of Article 8 of the European Convention on Human Rights concerning privacy, the rights, privacy rights of the family and children. Articles 8 and 24 of the EU Charter of Fundamental Rights has also been breached, again concerning privacy and children's rights. The relevant gagging order Patricia has spoken of is a clear violation of Article 41 of the Irish Constitution, the right of freedom of speech. There's no grounding or no standing for any judge in the state or, quite frankly, in any court globally to introduce a gagging order. Its purpose is clearly to intimidate, to keep, in this case, your mother dumbed down to what's going on while she's trying to understand what's happening around her children. And this is verified also under Article 10 of the United of the Universal Declaration of Human Rights. The right to freedom of speech is also verified in the Economic, Social and Cultural Rights. That's the United Nations. The statutory instrument in question that has taken Patricia's children is a violation of tort law, particularly under another statute called the Privacy Bill 2006. As a result, we have a tort of malicious prosecution, tort of negligence, breach of statutory care, breach of duty of care. We're nearly done with the listing here. Manipulation of child acts, which have been continuous statutory instruments around the children of the state here. which were implemented after the 2012 children's referendum. These statutory acts in question are a clear breach of the separation of powers constitutional doctrine, as all public bodies, in this particular case, TUSTA, who are drawing on power of other public bodies, is defined as secondary, is defined as secondary legislation. Okay.
Well, in other words, John, it's a masterful list, and I'm sure it's an even longer list, but in effect, they're breaking the law constantly. And I would need you to ask, you know, a simple question in all this is that, why are they getting away with it? How are they getting away with it? Haven't these issues been raised in court?
Absolutely. Well, actually, the list is endless, could be potentially endless. Obviously, these issues I've found. In reference to your question, there's a clear failing of our system revolving around our constitution, which is some 81 years of age now, 81 years old. The status quo, the powers that be, argue and verify that it's still standing the test of time, which is absolute nonsense. It's clear that it's not. It's clear that it's ignored by our judiciary. In particular, it's clear that it's ignored by our higher courts that have authority to examine constitutional safeguards and other aspects of international law and European law, as I've just stated in my listings. And in essence, to your question, we have a failing system here. We're trying to examine what we can do to turn it around. It's certainly not fair, it's certainly not transparent, and it's certainly not impartial. And it's quite clear that justice has not been served on any level whatsoever.
Okay, let me ask anyone else who hasn't spoken yet, if they want to comment, or anybody who's there, wants to comment on the whole issue of what to be done now in terms of Patricia's case or the whole bigger injustice happening.
Hiya, Kevin, it's Daniel. I don't know what to say about Trish's case, but I'd like to say to people, like, if you don't see the big trick here with this whole Catholic thing and the church, I mean, this has been a baby game for years here in Ireland. They sold over 70,000 babies while they had these institutions running, likes of Tuam and that. That's 70,000 babies that we know of. I mean, these people haven't stopped selling our babies or using the babies of this country to make money, you know? It's been going on years. As Vincent said, they've just changed their colours and that's it, you know. But they're not going to stop with just Trisha. I mean, they're making big money and they're planning on just going through more people, more single women, and continuously trying to make money off these kids and situations, you know. The whole Catholic thing, people have to understand, it's a complete trick. Even the Bible is a trick. I mean, you have two versions of a Bible, one where God is all wrathful and vengeful, and then you have a New Testament where he's suddenly had a personality change, like, and he's all loving and all this stuff.
Hard cop, soft cop.
Well, it's a bit like believing Israel is a place in the Middle East, considering the Israelites came from Egypt, and Israel is a breakdown of tree. Break it down to tree, you know, Israel. I mean, it's Isis, Amun-Ra, Elohim, you know. If you look at the phalanx or the what you call an obelisk in all these places like Washington, I mean, these are all to male energy, so they're worshipping Amun-Ra or the Baal culture, the bull culture, you know, Baal. And I mean, when you think of the word cattle, Catholic, I know it doesn't spell like that, but that's what it bloody means, you know what I mean? I mean, people are being tricked, duped, left, right, and center, and you don't know who's designing it. Like, we have Freemasons running around 6 million strong around the world, and you know, the whole law societies are benchers. These are secret societies over here too, and then you have bloody Freemasons. You have all these secret societies running around, and they're the designers of everything. And people don't see through that either. They don't look at the symbols and understand that the Star of David has nothing to do with anything with Israel, but it's actually a tantric sex sign, you know?
Well, you know,
it's amazing the way these people see these things.
Mary was saying earlier about the Catholic Church, and Mary, if you want to jump in again, feel free, but are people so fed up? Like, I know in some countries, we just mentioned Italy, where Catholic priests are actually splitting. from Rome and going off on their own. But do you find people in Ireland willing to do things like, you know, boot the Catholic priests out of the community, the ones who are known to be child molesters? Just get them out, banish them from the community, or make citizen arrest?
They don't.
No?
I've confronted so many. We were at a party on New Year's Eve out in Skerries a couple of years ago. The priest made a visit to the house that night at about 11:45. Big mistake. We were the last house on the estate. And when he walked in, there was the what do they call him, the parish priest and the curate. Mm-hmm. Oh, my God, he met his match that night because I just spread the whole thing out, Kevin. Of course, I'd had a couple of pints like you do on New Year's Eve in Ireland. I was raring to go. But just funny, while Danny was talking there, I just whispered into Patricia's ear. They ring the bell at 11:45 for mass at 12, and we all go running at 12.
Right.
Do they do that in Canada?
Oh, yeah.
The church bell rings, dong, 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 for 12 rings, and then we all run. But there's very few people running anymore.
See, I think... Kevin, I think so many people in Ireland for so long have, it's an indoctrination through the church. The church is a form of control in Ireland, has been for a long time. The control seems to be falling. The government don't have that form of control over people through the church because they were very closely knit together. But I think that form of control is now going. The government are finding other ways to actually stop people, you know, by using these statutes and acts and different things to control and manipulate and seize people's kids.
Well, I want to say as well that, you know, one of the things we folks have talked about, including in the last show, was the need to convene a common law court in Ireland to give people another forum, another, like an alternative to the existing system. Let's talk a little bit about that. And I know Kevin wanted to talk a little bit about the anti-corruption task force, if you want to jump in.
Yeah,
definitely. Well, it was set up nearly a couple of years ago, last June, 12 months. It was set up last June, 12 months, to counteract the judicial system, the promotion system in the girls, and other corrupt acts, Tulsa as well. There was five founder members. One of them founder members is in jail at the moment on trumped up charges. He has to do 3.5 years. There's another founder member who's finding himself having to face the courts and probably get another jail sentence. That's number two. The rest of us so far so good. We also have an Integrity Ireland, which is also closely linked with we call it ACT for short, Anti-Corruption Task Force. There's a Stephen Manning there. Now, he has already done jail as well for talking up against austerity and the judges.
Right.
He's up again next June, and he's probably facing another jail charge. We have a website there. We have two websites now on Facebook. The second one put up being that we do have infiltrators, and we have found that one of the infiltrators has more or less control of the first Facebook that we set up. This is how it goes. But we set up a second Facebook.
And it's under the name Anti-Corruption Task Force. Is it Ireland?
The first one is ACT, in capital letters, ACT Anti-Corruption Task Force. And the second one is Anti-Corrupt Task Force, ACT, ACT being behind Anti-Corruption Task Force.
And it sounds like they're targeting the leaders of this movement.
It's looking that way now. I can't understand. Perhaps the fact that I'm an ex-guard myself might be helpful to me, but I'm sure at some stage they're going to attack me. I have no problem with that whatsoever. And as a matter of fact, if to do, I have better reason. I have a long story against guard management. Well, just leave me short, man. See, the problem with the Garda Síochána Corner, the police force here, we call it the Garda Síochána Corner, is the promotion system. You have to be more or less of a criminal mind if you're to be promoted in the guards. And that is why, as a result, the last 2 years, we have two commissioners. We won't say, well, in reality, you can't say they're outside, but they had to step down because of their activities, especially with Garda whistleblowers. With the result that the last one The last commissioner stepped down last September and has not been replaced since, and will be replaced by an outsider. This outsider is supposed to be, have his own managerial team. Now, it will be interesting because I reckon they reckon that the new commissioner won't be appointed until next September, which begs the question, what are they doing? Are they trying to do something underhand again to get a commissioner there that they can control? That's really the all I have to say.
Okay. Well, based on all, everything we're being hearing today, if let's say tomorrow or this coming summer or the fall, we could publicly convene a common law court in Ireland, what would be some of the issues that you would bring into that kind of court? Anybody?
Firstly, I would love to see some accountability in Ireland for different things. It's very broad. It's to do with vulture funds. There are fisheries, the child trafficking issue, and our government itself, they're letting us down, you know.
But I would say, if you don't mind me putting in, the first issue I think would be the judges themselves. I think they have to be taken to task. They're completely, like, I mean, I wouldn't call them judges. They're sitting under judiciary seats. They're appointed by corrupt politicians. They have to be in with the political parties in this country, which has been a fall of fine gain. Once they're in with them parties, whichever party is in, they appoint their cronies on the judicial seats, and there's no way they have the integrity of the impartiality of a judge. They just do what they like. They have no, as Vincent says there, there's no accountability whatsoever. They put out, especially in the civil courts, more than likely when your case is heard, it's a kangaroo court, because all other cases are heard, more or less in private, and this is not a family law, this is an ordinary civil law. They they give a judgment, but when you get the written judgment, that written judgment could be completely different to the judgment they give. And then when you look for the DAO of the case, you won't get it. You have to apply through the courts to get the DAO, and they won't give it to you. And even if you go to a solicitor to look for the DAO, he knows what's going on, and he doesn't want to be the person to expose it. So I think the first thing you have to deal with is the judges. And then probably after that, the legal system and the appointment of officers in the Gard. That is my opinion. Other people might have other opinions.
Yeah, I think we need to get rid of the bar register in Ireland, Kevin, that all these judges and solicitors are working under. And the likes of the King's Inn and all them places all need to go. And a judge in the High Court, Justice Costello, said in January of this year that the Oireachtas, which would be the Dáil, actually makes up the decisions for the family law courts, and that the judges can't actually overrule the decisions of the Oireachtas. So I think for things to change in Ireland, that every sitting member in the Dáil that needs to go, and people that can do their job to be appointed back in, and the judges and the solicitors, every one of them needs to go, and people that are trained under a common law jurisdiction needs to be brought in to Ireland with the common law courts. All the judges, they're all in it together, Kevin. They're all, I scratch your back, you scratch mine. I was actually at my court case about a week and a half ago, just before I was called in. I witnessed two solicitors from Portlaoise, John Cummins, Farrell & Partner solicitor, who is actually Tusla's acting solicitor at the minute, and two team leaders for Tusla, entered into Portlaoise courthouse just minutes before my case, and they held a secret meeting in the courthouse and called me in then about 10 minutes after. I was the first case called up after they held that meeting. So I knew then that the decision was already made in the courts. But one of these Portlaoise solicitors I know is actually one of the Freemasons. So what he's doing in these courts, and the same solicitor I actually asked to represent me in court, and he told me he didn't do family law. So why was he in a family law case and discussing people's business in a closed court behind people's backs, you know?
Yep. I know what, so I had on my list here, Dave, have you spoken yet, or are you there?
No. We had we were supposed to have Damien. Yeah.
Oh, Damien.
He fell
sorry.
Today.
Oh, couldn't make it. Okay, Jean as well.
Kevin wants to go into a bit of background of his case. Is that okay?
Yeah.
Maybe you want to talk about something else first, Kevin.
No, go on ahead.
No, you go ahead.
Okay, but it goes back to 1983. I was 5 years in the girls then. In June 83, the then Minister for Justice, Michael Noonan, with regards to a certain town in Leitrim, the town called Ballinamore, there was a, I think it was 12 Gardaí at the time and a patrol car attached to it, because it was more or less a border station and there was a lot of activity on the border at that time with subversives and all that. But he took he made the decision to take the patrol car out of Ballinamore and to reduce the station number to, I think it was 4. That was in June. Now, the following December, a person by the name of Don Tidy, you mightn't be aware of this, but he was a big business tycoon here. He was an Englishman himself. He was kidnapped by the IRA.
Right.
Probably in late November. Now, it seems to intelligence they found out that he was somewhere around Ballinamore. He was eventually found, I think it was December the 16th, 1983, he was found. He wasn't found, he was located, and he was recovered, if we want to use that word. The IRA men, they were living out in a made-up tent in a small little forest on the back walls of Ballinamore. You're talking about a mile and a half from Ballinamore. Now, in the process, there was a lot of, I don't know, there was too many people there to catch too few, between the army and the Gardaí, and there was a lot of mishaps. One of the mishaps was that I was driving a prisoner with a guard and what you'd call a plainclothes guard. Probably, I don't think it was a tech, but he was a plainclothes guard who had arrested this prisoner because he is more or less, he'd be kind of a, even though he wouldn't have been in their way, he would have been helping them out. And I was asked to drive this prisoner and the same guard into Ballinamore Garda Station. On the way to Ballinamore, we came across a checkpoint of Gardaí and Army. You're talking about 13, 14 men. Now, for whatever reason or what, I don't know. But I was directed up a laneway from the road that I was driving on. And previously to me being directed up that laneway, there was already two Garda patrol cars directed up the same way. It seems there was a report gone out that the real subversives were driving on the same road that I was driving on, in the same coloured car, which was a blue car. No, it might not have been the same make, but the same colour. This is what I hear anyway. And as I turned right at the time to go up this lane that I was directed, all next thing, the whole Gardaí and Army started shooting at me. For what reason, I don't know. Now, it was a pure miracle I got out of it, but I did. Thanks be to God. At times I wonder, should I be saying thanks, Mr. God, because of what happened to me afterwards? But anyways, I got out of it anyway, and I don't know how many bullets went through the car, but a fair few went through anyway. And lucky enough that my head was ducked down, I would have got a bullet myself in the back of the head. The prisoner was, his neck was skinned by a bullet. But to make the long story short anyway, it eventually finished anyway, and I said the prisoner was properly arrested and brought to Ballinamore Garda Station. Now, I passed no heed of that. I kept working on, as a fact, being a local guard, they might have needed my head for some intelligence work. So I kept working on anyway, and would say come May 1984, which would have been 4 or 5 months afterwards, I was done in a sworn requirement for not serving the summons, of all things. A few months afterwards, I was... a certain sergeant was trying to prosecute me for absence on leave, if you want to put it that way. I was down in Cork with a girlfriend at the time. My car broke down. I had to ring up to get the day off to get the car fixed to drive back. And when I got back, this sergeant was trying to prosecute me for not being at work the day before when I should have been. But I already had applied to get for the day off. Lucky enough, there was a decent superintendent, one of the very few decent superintendents I ever met in the guards, and even though I was a guard myself, and he looked after it and kind of squashed it. Now, I was transferred, I had looked for the transfer, so nothing to do with the shooting itself, but I was transferred to Multifarnham. And in December then of 84, which was a 12 months after the shooting, I suffered from delayed shock, and I always figured that the two, even though they were minor things, the sworn prosecution, the sworn inquiry into the not serving a Mickey Mouse of a summons, and we said the effort by another sergeant who prosecuted me for not being at work when I should have been, well, I had legally looked for the day off anyway. That kind of, even though it was a small stress, but when you with what I had suffered, that had something to do with the way with the, my say nervous breakdown.
Kevin, tell me.
Yes.
Tell me. We're approaching the last 5 minutes of the show, so I got to just ask you. What is it exactly that is the issue then? Why do you think it happened?
Well, the issue is, like we said, till I retired, I was oppressed big time by Garda management, and the reason. I believe once I got out, and I was a mental wreck, you could say, when I retired. But after, say, I'm 10 years retired now, and we say the last 2 or 3 years, I'm getting my head back together. And I can see my reason would be the reason for the oppression by the guard management is that there should have been a full guard inquiry in why the guard DNR shot a mic at the car where I was like number one. I think it was a cover up that Michael Noonan at the time was trying to cover up the fact that he was the reason for what happened in Balmore. There's another guard was shot dead and a soldier shot dead. He was the reason for that, in my opinion, because he took away, as I was telling you earlier on, the patrol car from Balmore, and he also reduced the force. And he was minister for finance. He was Minister for Finance in the last government there, till Leo Varadkar became Taoiseach.
Okay.
And he's a backbencher now, but he's still a TD.
All right.
Now, that's the guy, Kevin, I told you, he told us to sew up our pockets.
Right. Talk a little bit about that for a minute or so, Mary. Who is it? Like, what exactly has he done?
Just, a group of activists in Ireland who formed a group called Dublin Says No. And we met every week on Sunday at 1 o'clock at the Central Bank of Ireland in Dame Street. And we protested down by the O'Connell Street, the GPO, and we did a couple of laps of O'Connell Street. But one time, a few of the guys, and we had a cameraman at the time, and we were over at Merrion Square. And we kind of were waiting around for our Taoiseach at the time, Enda Kenny, and Michael Noonan, Minister for Finance. And we called after Enda Kenny and we said, Enda, how has austerity affected you? And he fobbed us off. And then Michael Noonan came along and we said, Michael, how has austerity affected you? And he basically told us to sew up our pockets. In other words, you won't need your pockets because you won't have any money.
Right.
But it's a shame on him, Kevin.
He allowed the vulture funds to come into Ireland, and all the time he was investing into American stocks, you know.
Yeah.
It's an inside trading, if you want to think of it like that. Most of these politicians come out getting good jobs for the companies they were representing while in office.
Yeah.
So it's like, one hand washes the other, they look after each other, you know. And
all the more reason to start at the grassroots and reclaim the law in these common law courts. And bringing people together in assemblies to talk about these problems. You know, how do we can fix it in our communities?
Well, maritime courts are set for money.
Pardon me?
Maritime law courts are set up for money or the contract of money. I mean, common law courts are for the people. So if they want their maritime law, let them deal with their maritime law as business. The people should have a common law. They should be able to avail of something there that actually, you know, they can have some rights to the entity, to the person that really exists, you know.
Right.
Not these made up
corporations. In the last 3 or 4 minutes, I want to ask Patricia any other announcements, how are things coming, and any announcements anyone else has, like upcoming actions you might be doing.
I just like to, firstly, Kevin, I just like to point out that the support network I have at the minute, you're aware, I've Jean, Mary, John, Vinny, Danny. None of us met through Facebook. None of my support network met through Facebook. We have been friends long before we even became friends on Facebook. Secondly, I'd like to point out, because I know the social workers are going to be listening to this radio show. So secondly, I'd just like to say to the social workers that is listening to the radio show that I'm not going to go away. And if you think that I'm going to go away, you're thinking very, very wrong. Ye have all that matters to me. And I don't care if I have to take my last dying breath fighting for my kids. I'm going to do so. And I'm going to ensure that every one of ye social workers and every one of the judges and every solicitor and every hospital and doctor that ever done anything wrong with my kids, me and my kids will get justice for it. And I'm going to make sure of that. And whether that be through common law or through their own statutes and acts or both, I will do so. And I will do whatever it takes and go to whatever length it takes to have my kids returned. I have another radio show on the 21st of the month with actually another fellow that contacted me through your show, Kevin. And I'm going to be doing a radio show with him on the 21st. Actually, we're all going to be doing it as a group on the... On the 21st.
It's beautiful. We're going to have you back on. We're going to rally more support for you. Any other announcements folks have before we sign off here?
No. I think we're going to keep plugging away. We're certainly after answers and solutions to all of this.
You're asking me there about ACT. We call them peaceful assemblies outside judges' houses, and people of high positions in this establishment of ours. And on April the 15th, we intend to have a peaceful assembly outside the House of Clare office, who is the DPP in Ireland. And we're looking for plenty of support in it. Sorry?
Well, send me the news about that. We'll post that up at itccs.org. Let all our affiliates and people we know in Ireland know about that.
Organize, Jeff. We'll have the next week.
All right, brothers and sisters. Listen, I want to thank you for being on. We're going to have you on again. And you just keep going. I know you will. Patricia, we love you. We're behind you. And we'll have you back on soon. Thank you so much for being with us.
Thanks, Kevin.
Thank you, Kevin.
All right.
Thanks, Kevin.
Thank you, brothers, sisters.
We'll,
thank you, Kevin.
Thank you. And now, yes, in Gaelic, that means... Our day will come. Now, our day has come. And just before we sign off here, I wanted to remind you folks, we have a leaflet that we are distributing prior to Operation Atonement. It's called Leaving the False Churches. Basically, what it says to folks is during Good Friday, March 30th, right up to Easter Sunday, April 1st, people are to enter into 48 hours of reflection and then walk away from these murderous churches, Catholic, Anglican, United Churches, especially the Catholic Church that has a global child trafficking industry and which is responsible for what happened to Patricia Bland's kids and many more. So during that time, not only take that action, but fill out a pledge of non-cooperation. It's posted at itccs.org. There's a posting there, leaflets in French, Italian, and English you can run off. And it basically says, acting in good conscience, I hereby pledge to disassociate myself from this church, deny it all attendance, funding, and adherence. I do so because of this church's criminal conviction as a genocidal child-killing institution that has betrayed God and humanity and thereby has forfeited all rights and authority. You're to sign it, date it, stick it in the collection plate. Let these murderous churches know we're not going to fund them anymore. We've shown in practice that by shaking the tree like that at the roots, it has an effect. They are feeling this. That's why they're monitoring and trying to gag Patricia Bland, because they know it's having an effect. Take part in this campaign. Go to itccs.org, murderbydecree.com, write to us at thecommonland@gmail.com, and be back here next week for more news, more updates, and to be involved as a practical organizer on the ground. That's how we move mountains, brothers and sisters, through acting, not just learning. And finally, Minstrel Boy is our closing out song. It's dedicated to Patricia Bland and other great women warriors who will go down fighting for their children. If only we could all be like Patricia, fight to the death for the innocent and for the children. It's up to all of us. Until next week, stay strong, stay clear. We'll get there. Thank you. Amen.
minstrel boy to the war in